Welcome to Geek Vibes Live.
Welcome, 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 Geek Vibes Nation, to a very special episode of Geek Vibes Live Interview. We have an amazing guest today. Before I get into the introduction of him, allow me to introduce the two of us that will be interviewing him. I am Juwan, your host, and I am accompanied by Dane. What's going on, Dane?
Just really excited, man. Just extremely excited to talk to this guy that we're about to introduce.
Super excited. So without further ado, our guest tonight is a screenwriter, television producer, comic book writer, and a novelist. He is best known as the creator of the television series Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen and geeks out there, welcome Mark Guggenheim.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Very good. How are you guys doing?
Absolutely. Really, really, really good.
Doing great, Mark.
Awesome.
Excited to have you on.
Yeah, no, I'm excited too. This will be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I just wanted to say before we get into the I'm going to start off the interview and then Dane's going to kind of finish up. I did want to say before we got started, it was amazing. I actually met you. Me and my friend Joel met you at Ace Comic Con. You signed two comics for us. You were extremely nice. There was like a crowd around you, so we had like a billion questions to ask that we couldn't get a chance to ask you. So it's really good that we have you on now so we can ask some of them. But I just want to say it was an amazing experience to kind of meet you, shake your hand, and get those two autographs. I have them actually framed.
Oh, wow.
I haven't even read
flattering.
The comics.
Oh,
I haven't even
awesome.
Read the comics. I just have it framed, making sure my brothers and sisters come nowhere near it. I have the, you know, ready to fight them off if they try to. But without further ado, let's get right into the interview. I'll start off with a pretty easy question, and one that I think a lot of people are interested about. With the success of Arrow, I've always wondered, because Stephen Amell was someone who, to me, this is just from my point of view, was very under the radar as far as when he was first casted for Arrow. Wasn't someone that I think a lot of people knew about, but a lot of people know now. An amazing actor. Can you kind of walk me through the whole casting of Stephen Amell?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that although I guess Stephen was kind of under the radar, he wasn't under the radar that pilot season. We've been working ever since the beginning of Arrow. We've been working with casting director David Rappaport, and David had immediately targeted Stephen, and he basically said he brought in Stephen on a Tuesday, and he said by Friday this guy's going to have a show. It was just, you know, and this is true I think for a lot of up and coming actors. There are actors who, you know, they do guest spots. They are, as you say, under the radar, and they're. You can tell when they're just ready to pop. Like, you can tell when, okay, you know, these guys or these women have been in enough, enough guest spots or enough, like, you know, failed pilots or whatever, and you just know, okay, they are just waiting for their moment. And that particular year was really Stephen's moment. And he was the very first person that David brought in to show us. He is the first actor to audition for any part on Arrow. So it was kind of like, you know, there's nowhere to go but down, quite frankly, once Stephen walked in the door, because it was so clear that it was, you know, that the role was for him. I mean, he was perfect for it. And, you know, the moment he, you know, gave his audition, we were like, okay, well, now what do we do? Like, how do we keep him from getting, you know, cast by another pilot? You know, how do we make sure that when that Friday comes around, we're the pilot that he's in? Because, you know, it was pretty apparent that he would be in a pilot. You know, his talent was that obvious.
Yeah, no, I listen, I have fallen in love with Stephen Amell, as not only as a person, everything that he does, but as an actor, just what he's done with the character of Oliver Queen. I mean, I remember one of the first times I even knew about the Green Arrow at all was from Justice League Unlimited. So mm-hmm. It wasn't until I kind of saw the show to where I was like, whoa, there's a whole nother kind of you know, Oliver Queen, to where he's not this jokey, quippy kind of guy. It's more serious. It's more grounded. The acting all around, the writing and everything was just perfect. So it made me kind of want to dig deeper into, you know, other tellings of Oliver Queen. So it kind of goes into my next question. With the success of just the whole TV superhero universe that the CW has built, from season one of Arrow, did it ever occur to you that you guys could launch something bigger than just that show? Like, you guys could build a universe from the success of Arrow?
You know, I think in hindsight, Greg Berlanti saw that possibility a lot sooner than everyone else did. You know, and I say in hindsight because I don't think, you know, I wasn't talking to Greg about, you know, expanding the universe. I only sort of realized, you know, like I said, in hindsight, that this was something that was kicking, you know, that he was sort of kicking around. And I think he had said to Andrew Kreisberg during the middle of season one that he wanted to do a Flash series. You know, I think, you know, I will say, and this is a little bit of a digression, but, I, you know, there's all this talk these days because of the success of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's all these talk, you know, about, well, we're going to create this universe, or we're going to create that universe. It's going to be on television. It's going to be in features. And I think what everyone sort of loses sight of is what Marvel did, and quite frankly, in retrospect, what we ended up doing, which is you don't start off trying to create a universe. You start off just trying to create one good show or one good movie, because that alone is hard. and then you very slowly build those, you know, build those pieces that allow you to expand it into a universe. And that's, you know, with Arrow, quite frankly, look, you know, Greg and I had just come off the experience of doing Green Lantern, which, you know, was not a good experience. And the end result was not, you know, anything we were proud of. So we weren't even thinking about it. We were not only not thinking about a universe, we weren't thinking about a series. We were thinking about, let's just get the pilot right. Like, let's just make a pilot that doesn't suck. And then, you know, once we did that, I was like, well, let's make the second episode and make the second episode not suck. And it was, you know, that first season of Arrow, it was really hard. I mean, it was very, very difficult to get that show right. And we were just so focused on that. You know, like I said, it certainly never occurred to me that the show would spin off much less a universe. And I think it wasn't until, you know, more than halfway through the first season that Greg started to even contemplate another series. But, you know, even another series, like I said, is still different from a universe. It's just one more series. And then along came Legends, along came Supergirl, and suddenly it's like, wow, there's a lot of superheroes here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I will ask you, it's part of the same question before we move on to another question. How much fun was it for you with the idea of, like, as soon as the green light was given that you could, you know, that Flash was going to be something that was going to be made? How much fun was it incorporating just Barry Allen into, I believe it was the second season of Arrow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I, in those early days, everything was so hard. I don't really recall anything being quote unquote fun. You know, everything was still a real challenge. And, you know, introducing Barry, the challenge with introducing Barry wasn't about introducing Barry. It was about introducing superpowers into the Arrow universe. You know, because we always said, and you can go back online, you know, because everything lives online, and see interviews where Greg, Andrew, and myself were like, no superpowers, totally grounded. And, you know, obviously once you decide to do the Flash, it's like, okay, well, I guess there's superpowers in this world. And the question, the very legitimate and serious question is, well, how do you do it in a way that does honor the grounded nature of the show, that does feel like it belong in this grounded world that we've now created. And that was, yeah, that was true. I look back on and think less in terms of it being fun and more in terms of it just being really challenging.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. But I will say the way Barry was introduced into the world was still very grounded. And you know, he wasn't really using powers when we first saw him.
That's true.
So, you know, all those elements were still there and still true. You know, it quickly changed not that long after. But, you know, Arrow stuck to, you know, being grounded and all those things, even introducing Barry. I will say I geeked out like crazy at the sight of seeing Barry Allen interact with Oliver Queen. It was amazing. I will say one of the biggest questions everyone in Geek Vibes Nation, I know everyone that watches Arrow has for you that I'm going to get into. There has been almost, I want to say, at least once, maybe every season of Arrow, or maybe every other season, a mention of Bloodhaven. And every time I hear it, I just go, I feel like there is a certain hero that is attached to Bloodhaven.
Right.
So I ask you, with the mention of Bloodhaven, as much as we've gotten it in the history of Arrow, is there a possibility we'll ever see Dick Grayson?
You know, I've learned, you know, over the course of doing this for 6 years now, never to say never, but I have learned to say it's extremely unlikely. you know, you've got the Titan series that's being developed. You've got Gotham. At the end of the day, there are other shows that have a much, you know, stronger claim to Dick than we on Arrow do. I would not hold my breath.
I tell you, you guys drive me insane. We had a mention of Bruce Wayne on Arrow, and it's just like,
yeah.
Oh man. We want so many
Hal
of these
Jordan.
Characters to be able to – Hal Jordan, yeah. We want so many of these characters to come together. And it's just like, oh, why won't you guys just let Mark Guggenheim have all the control, give him all these characters, and let him just expand upon, you know, the fact that Oliver Queen could stumble across Bloodhaven and run into Dick Grayson. Like, that would be so awesome, so awesome.
Well, it would be totally fun. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's – you know, the conversations about which character used to on which shows, they really sort of begin and end with Jeff Johns. And I have a good relationship with Jeff, and I, you know, whenever I want to use a character, you know, he's the person I call. I can't say with any honesty that he's ever denied me. I mean, he's always said, yeah, go ahead, use that character, or use that, you know, use this character. Like, you know, it's very... You know, the largesse that DC has shown us, because at the end of the day, these are their characters. The largesse that they've shown us, the generosity that they've shown us, you know, in Arrow is pretty remarkable. So, you know, I look at the glass as more than half full. And I also, you know, I also recognize, like, you know, if I was the, you know, showrunner, say, of Titans, you know, I'd probably want Dick Grayson all to myself, at least, you know, in the early going. Just to use that as an example. So, you know, while it would be fun, looking back, we, you know, Greg and I, we never ever imagined that we would see this many, you know, superheroes on television, you know, in this little Arrowverse that you know, we've built. It's like, it's really kind of remarkable. Even by the end of season one of Arrow, we were like, we can't believe it. We introduced Slade Wilson. We introduced Roy Harper. We introduced the Huntress. We had no plans whatsoever to introduce those characters in the first season of Arrow. Those were all like pipe dream characters. Like, oh, maybe we'll get to them eventually. You know, if we ever get a second season, if we ever get a third season. So we've put more characters on these shows than we ever, ever imagined. It always surprises me.
Yeah, no, as a fan, we always want our cake and to eat it too, but you know, we are really grateful of the characters that we do have established in the CW. It's just what drives us crazy is when we get those little teases We're just like, all right, cool, we'll be patient, it's coming, and then it's like, oh wait, it's not coming. So it
yeah,
does,
that's
it
true.
Does
I guess that's true. I never thought about it that way, and you're absolutely right. We have just totally been a total tease here. We do it because not because it's fun, like we're trying to like goose anyone, but we do it just because we fundamentally are fans also, and
right.
For example, like when Oliver's in Coast City, it's like, well, you got to see a guy with a bomber jacket, that says Jordan on it. You just have to. So it is fun. But, yeah, it never occurred to me that in some cases we're setting up false expectations.
Yeah, just a little bit. But, I mean, honestly, it's more so on us because, like I said before, we want our cake and to eat it too. So, I mean, you guys haven't come out and said, hey, there's a chance you guys could see Hal Jordan. So it's just once we see the tease, we then take it and run with it. So I wouldn't blame you guys at all. I actually want to thank you for all the amazing characters that we have in the CW that I know a lot of us comic book fans never thought we'd even see on the television screen at all. So, we're definitely thankful on those characters. One of the characters that I was really excited about that I'm really hoping your answer is something very positive to what my hopes are. I was a huge fan of Artemis from Young Justice.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that was the only telling of Artemis. I could be wrong, but I believe that was one of the only tellings of Artemis at that time was from Young Justice. And they did an amazing job with that character. So my question to you is, we didn't really get to see that much of Artemis from last season. What are the possibilities that we could see Artemis come back?
I don't know if it would happen in season six, but the possibility is always out there. We love that character, and it's funny. Just the other day, I was thinking about Evelyn, and being like, wow, really, never sort of showed what happened, to her, on Lee and you after episode 523. So, it's something that's it comes up in the writers' room. It's on our minds. It's funny. It's like we've got this wealth of characters now after six seasons of Arrow where, we're always looking to get Huntress back on the show, always want to get Jessica DeGaulle back on the show. And it's a funny thing. It's like you would think with 23 episodes a year, we would have all the time in the world to oh, we're going to tell a story with Evelyn. We're going to tell a story with Helena. We're going to tell this story. We're going to tell that kind of story. And yet, when you start to get into the season, the episodes fill up really fast in this really unexpectedly odd way. So what happens is, you may have an idea to, do a Huntress episode or do an Artemis episode, and it keeps getting kicked down the road, until suddenly you're writing the season finale, and you're like, oh, we never got to that story. But we, like I said, with 23 episodes each year and the fact that, we don't seem to, have a cancellation looming, knock on wood, in the near future, anything is possible. And, we would love to, that's Evelyn's definitely a character who comes up in the writer's room quite often. And usually that's a pretty good indication that eventually we'll get around to, revisiting that character.
That is exactly the answer I was hoping for, because I did want to kind of see that character grow more into her own. So I was just like, oh, man, the island blew up. And then when season six started, we kind of saw a lot of what happened to majority of everyone on that island. She was really the only one that we didn't really get a clear picture or story about what happened with her. So I was just like, hopefully that means, maybe she did survive. Maybe Slade grabbed her and took her with him. Just a whole bunch of different possibilities. Speaking of Artemis, though, and the idea of possibilities going forward, I have to ask you, because I love these characters on Young Justice also, any possibility maybe next season or maybe somewhere down the line? Because I see Arrow being on for at least 16 more years. I need it. I love this cast way too much. Is there any possibility we could get a Sportsmaster in Cheshire, major villain team up or anything along those lines with those two characters?
I can tell you that we have had very specific conversations with DC Comics about one of those characters.
Yes, that is so
awesome.
And
that's as much as I'm going to say.
I was just about to say I am not going to press it any more than that. Dane can speak to this. I've been begging for these two characters to at some point. And then when you guys introduced Artemis last season, I remember telling Dane and Joel, like, yes, we could be getting either Cheshire or Sportsmaster at some point soon. Cast Ray Stevenson, he'd be an amazing Sportsmaster.
You're right.
So just putting that out there, you know, that would be an amazing casting. But you saying that one of those characters was even being discussed or even thought about is enough for me. I'm just geeking out tremendously about that. So thank you for that. I will ask this, though, kind of going into this season and how can I just say really quickly before I even ask my question, I thought last season was one of the greatest superhero seasons like ever. It had so many twists and turns. It hit you in so many different ways. It was just so well done. And I was just like, man, how are they going to top that great season, you know, entering season six? And you guys definitely found a way to do that. This season is amazing. I love this season just as much as I love last season. So one of the things that's been racking my brain, is there any chance that we could get an Oliver Dinah love angle?
I don't think so. I get it. I understand why you're asking, because, you know, Oliver's the Green Arrow and Dinah's the Black Canary, and Green Arrow and Black Canary are together in the comics. But, you know, Oliver is now married to someone who's not the Black Canary or ever will be the Black Canary. And I just don't think there's any desire on our parts to tell a story about Oliver cheating on his wife.
Yeah. No, I completely understand that. And the main reason why I was asking, it wasn't even necessarily just because of the comics. I love when those two characters are on screen together. The two actors that play those characters, I just love when they're together.
They're fantastic together. They really are. I mean, I will say right now they're like really hating each other. Not the actors, the characters. Characters really, really hate each other right now. So that's probably the other pretty significant impediment. To getting them together is like right now they would just as soon kill each other as kiss each other.
Exactly. But we do know in the whole comic world, the more aggression two characters like that have towards each other usually means the best love stories blossom from it. But no, I completely understand where you're coming from, and you definitely don't want to kind of go down a storyline of Oliver cheating on his wife at all.
Yeah,
I completely
I can't
get
think
it.
Of a quicker way to get the internet to hate me more than it already does. And that's really saying something.
No, I completely understand where you're coming from. And honestly, again, it's the fan base wanting the cake and to eat it too. Like, just
sure.
Be glad that we have Black Canary on this show at all. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, just be happy with that. You guys have done an amazing job with the character. Yeah, we technically have three of them if you think about it. White Canary.
Yeah, oh my God, we got more canaries than we know what to do with,
exactly.
Which is kind of amazing. I mean, look, I think it's funny. It's like you could field an entire show off of, you know, you could field off an entire show off of the canaries. Like you could just do, you know, like Katie Lotz, Katie Cassidy, and Juliana Harkavy. Like, I'd watch that show. That's great. You know, that's a great
Absolutely.
Cast.
Absolutely. Actually, sign me up for that. We need like a little short, maybe like 8 episodes of just that. I'd be down for that completely. Another question I'm having, because Oliver has in this season has not only had to burden being the mayor, but being a hero, and now I'd say his toughest job, more so than being a hero, is being a dad. In one of the last episodes that we saw, William is kind of wanting to be a part of this world more so than he should. So the dying question is, is there a chance we ever see William or, you know, in the near future, try to step in the, walk in his dad's footsteps of becoming a hero?
You know, it's funny, that episode that you're talking about, which was 613, there was a moment that was scripted, and we shot it. It just didn't work, so it didn't make it in the cut. But basically, in that moment, William is in the lair with Oliver at the end of the episode, and he looks over to where the bow is. And Oliver sort of sees him looking and goes, maybe when you're in high school. Which was a lot of fun. It just, unfortunately, the moment just, it just didn't play on camera the way, we felt it needed it to in order to justify being in the cut. Maybe in the deleted scenes on the DVD.
I'll be buying that DVD to see that deleted scene. That gave me chills a little bit. Last question before I pass it over to Dane. Thank you so much for asking all of my geeky out there questions.
Oh, no, of course. Love it.
Will Diggle possibly go through what Roy Harper did in the comics and somewhat on I think what I saw it last was Young Justice more so than the comics with his arm. We see, that he kind of found a way to make the pain and everything go away for now. But is there a possibility that could come back into play in a major way, and we maybe see Diggle kind of walk the same lines that Roy Harper did in I'll go with Young Justice.
Right, I'm with you. I'll tell you, the chip in his arm, it definitely comes back into play in 614. The question of, it's funny, David Ramsey asked me, hey, am I going to lose an arm? here's the fundamental problem with that, which is it's really expensive to digitally chop off limbs. It means, we've got to outfit, we'd have to outfit David with a green sleeve and digitally remove it and digitally replace it with a mechanical arm if we were to go that route. And it's a cost that a television show is not really, it's not really equipped to handle. I think truth be told, also, if we were going to do it, if we were going to find the money and do it, I would, quite frankly, I'd sooner have Colton Haynes come back on the show and chop off his arm, and be, consistent with the comics. Again, I never say never. I think if we were to do it, I'd much like, if we're gonna undertake something as technically challenging as that, I'd rather do it in service of Roy's character, and be true to the comics than do it in service to Diggle.
Absolutely, I completely understand that. We definitely need Roy back. Can't wait to see that play out on the screen. I had to ask because as soon as I saw it, I was just like, because, Roy's not back on a permanent basis, well, as of yet, maybe that is an angle that they could go with for Diggle, but I completely understand your reasoning, and I appreciate that you would rather stick closer to the accuracy than to kind of just build this in for someone else. So I completely love and respect that. Thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. I was just going to tell you, in the show, Arsenal basically, Roy gave his costume to Thea so that Thea could become Speedy.
Right.
So when we had Colton return to the show, his character, spoiler alert, is going to go out into the field, but he doesn't have a costume anymore. So the look that he is, rocking for those action sequences, I think you'll be really pleased. It's very true to the comics.
Chills again. Listen, this is sending me into a chills overload. I cannot wait. I need this small break to hurry up and be over so we can get some more Arrow episodes going.
I like the break because I don't want to be up against the Olympics.
Listen,
I don't blame
I'd rather watch Arrow over the Olympics any day.
Well, thank you.
But thank you again for answering all my questions. I do not want to take all the time away from Dane. So
okay.
Let me pass it before I ask you another 3 hours worth of questions. Dane, take it away.
Yeah, Jawan wasn't kidding about that Sportsmaster thing. I think he tells me that once a day, Mark.
So, I love that character. I mean, I'm a big, you know, big fan of that character. So, you know, I get it. Like I said, we never thought that we would ever get to do a lot of these characters. I mean, almost all these characters.
Incredible.
It's crazy. So, you know, it always, you know, just, it always surprises me in many ways. Like, I'm like, really? Are they letting us get away with this? Are they not letting us do this? I can't believe it. You know, it's kind of amazing.
Yourself?
I do. Well, it's funny. Like, when we did the crossover this year and we had literally all the superheroes that we've got to date on the, you know, on the Bridge of the Wave Rider, you know, it was like, you know, I sent a picture of it to Greg Berlanti and I'm like, what have we wrought? Like, how the hell did this happen? You know, it's kind of crazy. You know, but it's a dream come true. But like I said, we're fans first also, you know?
Absolutely. And I just, everything that you and Greg and also John's have achieved with this, it's pretty amazing. Kind of what you're saying ties into my first question. You know, obviously there's a lot of characters, and you kind of established a little bit with Jawan, and you kind of said, like, Geoff Johns, you have a good communications with him on using characters, but to an extent, maybe you can clear some stuff up, I don't know, but, like, you know, obviously Batman is tied into Gotham, and you'd be able to use Superman, but, like, Desmond Wonder Woman, obviously, on the show. You know, you have Titans now, so Dick Grayson's going to have a chance to be on there. And there's also rumors, and I don't know if they're true or not, Mark, stuff is put on the internet that, you know, Slade might not be coming back due to what goes on in the movies. My question to you, does it become frustrating, even though that you have this arsenal of amazing characters, to kind of be limited, though, with, like, characters like Deadshot and Deathstroke on your CW universe from the movies, when I think you guys have established a more flourished universe in the first place? And I know there's no competition, but I'm just saying, you know, it must be a little frustrating on your end.
Honestly, it really isn't. And it goes back to what I was saying before, which is I'm just grateful for the characters we are using. And I certainly, like, you know, I feel like it would be so disingenuous and unfair of me to sort of stamp my feet and go, well, you've given us access to all these characters, but I want even more. You know, that doesn't feel consistent with being a good partner, you know, to me, if I were to do that. Like, you know, I think, you know, it's a big universe. Like I said, it's their characters. We're just borrowing them. And, you know, I totally respect and appreciate the fact that the management of all these characters, the management of this IP, there's so many different factors that go into these kinds of decisions that I'm not even privy to. You know, it's like, it is so far above my pay grade, to know the machinations or to think about the machinations. So, you know, it probably sounds like bullshit, but it's truly sincere. Like, I'm just happy with all the characters that we've got. You know, do I always want more? Sure. Do I always, like, want certain characters? You know, like, yeah, it would be fantastic to have Manu back on Arrow as Slade Wilson, but I can't say that, you know, it ever rises to the level of, you know, frustration for me, because, like I said, it's like the glass is so much more than half full here. It feels, I guess if I were to get frustrated, it would feel very greedy, you know? You know, we have such an embarrassment of riches to complain about. It seems, it just seems wrong to me. So no, I mean, and also, like, you know, the movie universe, you know, you're right. They're going about it their own way. And they've got, you know, sort of their own system in place. And like I said, there's a lot of corporate decision-making. And you know, even though, like I said, like, you know, my conversations about the characters really begin and end with Geoff Johns, it's not just solely Geoff's decision. It's like, there are CEOs and company presidents and all manner of people, like, that are, you know, that are involved in this. And I'm, you know, at the end of the day, and this isn't false modesty, this is just reality. At the end of the day, I'm not even, you know, the showrunner of the other superhero shows. I'm just responsible for Arrow and Legends. So,
yep.
You know, Superman, Supergirl, above my pay grade. You know, characters of Flash, above my pay grade. You know, I've got, you know, just the two shows that I'm, you know, responsible for, and that keeps me plenty busy. And I'm actually quite glad not to have the responsibility.
No, that makes a lot of sense, and it's great, and I completely believe you on you being humble about it. It just, I think, and I mean, I'm sure you've gotten this from the fans a lot. We loved Manu Bennett's performance as Slade, and we loved having him back for those episodes.
No, it was honestly like it was such a gift for us, and it's always great to have him. I mean, here's the thing, you know, this is the other reason why I can be, you know, somewhat sanguine about this, which is things change. Like, there was a period after season three where, again, you know, Deathstroke was going to be in the Batman movie, and DC was like, no Slade Wilson on Arrow. And then they changed their plans, and that opened up a window for us to have Slade Wilson and Manu on the show at the end of season five and in the two episodes in season six. So because things have changed over the years, I can basically go, okay, well, that's the situation right now. Like right now, okay, They've got plans for Deathstroke. But I also know that none of this stuff is ever written in stone. Things do change because they already have changed. So I'm very content to just sort of wait, you know, pick my spots, you know.
Absolutely, and that makes complete sense. I mean, honestly, and this is not to sound selfish, I don't want Manu Bennett coming back, but if I had a choice, since you guys have a multiverse established and Greg's doing a Titan show, I would love Manu Bennett to show up on that show as that Earth's Deathstroke and interact with those characters first and foremost. Because I love him on Arrow, but that would be obviously a great place for Manu to, like, you know, really get to know the whole Deathstroke character, because he seems he loves performing as it. But let's go back to your first series, Eli Stone. It ended before the story could be completed. Are there any plans to bring that series back or possibly finish the story in a film format to some extent?
You know, unfortunately, no. I think, you know, too much time has passed. You know, the show wasn't considered a quote-unquote success. You know, we did have four unproduced scripts at the end of the day, and there was a time way, way, way back when I was talking to Marvel actually about adapting adapting those unproduced scripts into a comic book. You know, I don't, you know, I think if Eli were to have another life, it would probably have to be some type of reboot situation, where it was, you know, it was reconceived as a movie or something, which, you know, could be totally cool. I think the problem, you know, quite frankly, the problem at the moment with that is ABC Studios, and which means Disney, owns Eli Stone. Greg and I do not own it. So, you know, and right now, you know, Greg and I are not involved with Disney. So I don't see it happening. But I love the fact that people still talk about the show. I love the fact that there's still love for the show. And, you know, again, I've learned never to say never. You know, crazier things have happened.
Yeah, that seems like it's going to be a reoccurring theme tonight, but I agree with you, and I really enjoyed it myself, and I had to ask. I know this stuff, you worked on shows like Law & Order and CSI. From what you've learned writing for those shows, do you have any plans to maybe do a film or a television show in the world of law enforcement?
Oh, good question. You know, I would love to. I mean, look, I love that arena. I wrote a movie for Robert Downey Jr. a number of years ago based on the Perry Mason character, and that was a blast. That was,
really?
You know, it was period, so it was, you know, 1930s, but, you know, had a courtroom drama element to it. And that was a blast to write. So it's funny, like, you know, I hadn't really thought about it until you asked the question, but I don't get asked to write a lot of features with a legal component. Perry Mason's kind of the only one I can think of. So, yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I love I love writing legal dramas. It's what I grew up on, you know, watching them, you know, watching L.A. Law and Picket Fences and Law and Order, and I love writing it, so yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of crime shows as well. In the Heat of the Night, and I can't believe all the ones I watched.
The Heat of
the Night.
Yeah.
That was a great show and a great movie.
Terrific.
Yeah, you and Jeff Johns, you guys have a good relationship. Have you been approached possibly by him to either write maybe a DC cinematic film or even possibly a comic book or anything like that?
You know, we've talked about doing a comic. You know, I actually met with Dan DiDio last year at C2E2 to talk about, you know, taking over a book. You know, I've quite frankly, my comic book plate has just been so busy in the last year. I really only have the bandwidth to really, I mean, truth be told, like, to really write one comic at a time. I say that even though I'm technically writing like the equivalent of three comics right now because X-Men Gold, Double Ships, and I'm also doing Swords of the Swashbucklers. You know, at the moment there's just no sort of room in the queue for a DC comic. But I've totally, yeah, I've talked to Dan and Jeff about doing a DC comic, and it would be fun. I've written for DC before. I really like those guys, and you know, maybe, you know, down the road, you know, there's no gig lasts forever. I imagine I'm not going to pull a Claremont and write X-Men Gold for the rest of my life. So, you know, so when something opens up, it would be fun.
Yeah, and even you didn't mention it, but the film aspect, like, possibly the Booster Gold movie that your good friend Greg's supposed to be doing sometime soon in the future?
Yeah, I don't know what is going on with Booster Gold. Yeah, look, I would love – nothing would make me happier, quite frankly, than to write a superhero feature film, you know, for either Marvel or DC, quite frankly.
Yeah.
No one's asked, you know, so – I've written a bunch of movies for Warner Brothers. Actually, Perry Mason was a Warner Brothers movie. And you know, so I know all the guys over there. You know, I don't know, waiting for the phone to ring.
All right, someone call Mark right now. I'm serious.
It'd be so cool if my phone rang right now.
That would be really weird, actually.
It'd be cool.
You mentioned, yeah, it would actually be awesome. You mentioned X-Men Gold. And obviously, you kind of answered this, that you have a lot going on. But if you had time, are there a certain title from DC or Marvel that you'd love to tackle?
Yeah, you know, I've never really done – like, I've written Batman and Superman for DC, but never really done a run. You know, they've always been closed-end stories. So doing a run on either of those books would be really a lot of fun. I would love – I always say to Marvel, like, once Charles Soule goes off of Daredevil, I would love to tackle Daredevil again because of my, you know, my legal writing background. I'd love to get my hands on Matt Murdock. I've really been jonesing to go back to Wolverine, the original Wolverine, but he's currently dead, so it's a little hard. I did that was sort of what really got me my start in comics was writing Wolverine, and that was a lot of fun. And I've got an idea for another Punisher story, but again, I've been waiting for, you know, bandwidth to open up to even pitch it to Marvel.
I got you. That makes a lot of sense. You're an extremely busy guy. All right. With Black Lightning being such a success, how long do you think it'll be before an inevitable crossover with the rest of the Arrowverse?
You know, again, this is a perfect example of one of those glad it's above my pay grade kind of questions.
I got
you. You know, I think, you know, it's also, at the end of the day, not only is it above my pay grade, but truth be told, I really think that that's a decision that, first and foremost, Saleem, the showrunner and creator of Black Lightning, that's really up, in my opinion, that's something that he should decide. Like, you know, no one should decide that for him. You know, he's got a very clear vision for his show, which I think is really, really cool. And I love the fact that it's so different from the other, you know, four superhero shows on the CW. I you know, if you were asking me, like, you know, how should things work, I would say he should get to decide that. And then we sort of go from there. I will say, you know, that said, here's the selfish part of me. The selfish part of me is they shoot in Atlanta. All the other superhero shows shoot in Vancouver. The logistics of any kind of crossover would be such a nightmare. You know, you'd basically have like, you know, 3,000 miles separating the two productions, two sets of productions. And I don't relish the idea of doing that. So Salim, say you don't want to do it, man. Just don't do it. No, I'm kidding. We you know, the thing about the crossovers is they're always really cool, but they're always really difficult. So, you know, the fanboy in all of us, you know, ends up winning out.
Well, speaking about fanboy, my God, this last crossover was incredible. Seeing all those characters there and the cinematic fight scenes that you guys were able to pull off. I understand that you guys probably get a good budget for the shows, but you guys, between King Shark and the crossovers, you guys have implemented that budget outstandingly. Like, how do you do it? Just basically, I mean, I guess in a monetary, you got to figure out like what episodes to take stuff away from to be able to do stuff like King Shark. Is that correct? And Gorilla Grodd.
Yeah, we get some additional money for the crossovers, but truth be told, it's never enough. And we're always sort of carrying that overage down through the remainder of the seasons for all four shows. So it's kind of, unfortunately, the crossover from a budgetary perspective is this gift that keeps on giving. You know, so it's, and each show, you know, sort of figures out its own way to make up for the shortfall. But it's, you know, it's worth it, you know, because we're all really, really proud of the crossover this year. We're very, very glad that everyone seemed to have enjoyed it. You know, and the way we approach it is really, quite frankly, the way we approach the pilot of Arrow and really have done everything since, which is we basically write the version – we just write the version we want to see. We write the version that is – completely, you know, completely devoid of any budgetary concerns. You know, we basically don't think about whether or not we can produce it. We just write the ideal version. And then once we've written the ideal version, that's only the point that it's only at that point that we face reality, which is, okay, well, we don't have a feature budget. So, and we don't have a feature length schedule. So, you know, there are realities that intrude. How do we then get this in some kind of, you know, scheduling and financial box that is achievable? And that, you know, it's a painful process of picking and choosing and killing all your darlings. But I believe that because we start from a place of incredible ambition, that's how as much that ends up on the screen ends up on the screen. We end up, you know, filming a lot more from, you know, at the end of the day, because from the very beginning, we've started out with these crazy outsized expectations and outsized ambitions. If you know, sort of like if you don't swing from the fences, you're not going to hit a home run. So there's also like little things that surprise you, like production wise, you go, well, wow, we thought that would be really expensive, but turns out it's not. Or, wow, that really is expensive, but here's the savings we weren't expecting. You know, there's a certain amount of luck involved, but there's also just a lot of, you know, hard work and elbow grease and you know, creative accounting that goes into it.
Well, the digital effects are incredible and they speak for themselves. And I have to admit, you had my 34-year-old ass crying. Spoiler warning. And I would hope that my community has watched the crossover, but spoiler warning, when Victor Garber died on the show, like completely, you know, sobbing, like, you know, grown man tears. It was pretty incredible, so I appreciate that.
Well, thank you for saying that, and thank you for watching it. I think Victor and Franz both, you know, they just crushed that. I mean, they just completely killed that whole moment. And it really is kind of devastating. And, you know, that's a scene that was written very long, and, you know, the scene in the cut is for a TV show, for a network TV show, that scene goes on for a very long time. You know, we were kind of violating this unwritten rule that says that you don't have scenes this long. But, you know, Victor and France were so fantastic that I think we only ended up cutting like just a few lines of dialogue. And it really wasn't for time. It was just because we noticed that certain lines of dialogue played better without other lines of dialogue, which is often the case. So, you know, the scene just, it even though it's long, it wants to be as long as it is because it's just so, you know, it's so rich and, you know, difficult to watch.
Absolutely. I thought it was very well paced for a long scene. All right. Last thing before I let you go, because I know you're a busy man. I appreciate you talking to us, obviously. This is more of me just throwing a concept at you that I've had in my head. And since I'm talking to Mark Guggenheim, I might as well just tell you about it. I don't expect you to finalize this or tell David Rappaport about this, but there's a character in the Arrow comic universe that there's been many people that have said is impossible to bring to the small screen, big screen at all. He can only be achieved in the comics, including the creator, Kevin Smith, which you guys have worked with, called Onomatopoeia.
Huh.
And I say that's not true, that you could definitely do him. And I just have a combination I want to just throw your way and see if you like this idea, basically. I think that if you got Ray Park to do the physical performance for the character and kind of like move and stuff like that, and then you got Michael Winslow from Police Academy to do the vocal performance, and then maybe shoot it from his perspective, so it's like that 60s Batman, bang, pow type of stuff. Maybe Sin City-ish, and you kind of go back and forth. I think you could achieve that character very easily, and people don't give credit to that character. But just wanted to throw that at you.
You know, I tell you, ever since, I mean, literally since day one of Arrow, we've been talking about, you know, doing Onomatopoeia. And truth be told, like, we've never felt like you can't do him live action. You know, I would say that, you know, that's one of those characters. It's funny. That's one of those characters that still remains on our bucket list on Arrow of like, okay, you know, eventually we got to do it. So, you know, I never say never. That character literally comes up every year. In fact, you know, back in season one, I'll tell you, no one knows this. This is a secret. But there's an episode, I forget, it's in the 116, 117 range, that J. August Richards played this character. We ended up scripting him as just Mr. X. But originally, in our original conceit of that episode, that character was Onomatopoeia.
Well, all I'm saying is I don't think I'm the most creative person on the planet, especially compared to you guys. But if for some reason you want to use any of those ideas, go for it. I will just enjoy watching it on screen as a performance.
Yeah, no, believe me, it would be a shame if we, you know, if at whatever point Arrow ends, it would be a shame if it ended without us having done Onomatopoeia at least once.
Yeah, he's interesting. He's kind of like a Deadpool meets Snake Eyes character, and just completely off the wall.
And he's got a great look to him. You know, there's just so many different reasons to use that character.
Well, yeah, Juwan went a little bit of fanboy on you with the Ray Stevenson thing, so I had to throw that out there at the end. But hey, Mark, we're really appreciative to have you on. We'd love to have you on again, especially after the season of Arrow is done and Legends.
Yeah,
so we can talk more about
fun.
Them. Before you go, do you mind doing a drop for us?
Sure. I don't think I'm that hip with the lingo. What's a drop?
Okay, so a drop would be we're going to use your voice at the beginning of shows to make people think that we're cool, basically.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you're using the word cool correctly, but okay.
No. Definitely cool. But basically just say, hey, I'm Mark Guggenheim from whatever you want to state, and you're listening to Geek Vibes Live.
Let me think so I can not sound like a total idiot here. Hey, this is Mark Guggenheim from Arrow and DC's Legends of Tomorrow. You're listening to Geek Nation Live.
Thank you very much, Mark. We appreciate you coming on. Like I said, if we can get you back after the seasons are done.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fun.
You'll probably be a much more relaxed individual, but we can't wait to talk to you again.
God, I hope so. I really hope so. Cool. Well, that'd be fun, guys. I would enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Right,
thank
thanks,
you
Mark.
So much.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Good luck.
Take care.
Well, that
wow,
was a very
dang.
Fun interview.
That was amazing. I am in cold sweats right now. Wow. That was amazing. So many great scoops, so many great just little tidbits and things like that. And listen, I know he couldn't say it, but he loved our pitches that we gave to him. I'm just going on the limb and say he loved it. He loved your onomatopoeia, and he loved my Ray Stevenson as Sportsmaster. I'm going to just go on the limb and say that. But it was an amazing interview. Thank him so much. Thank you so much, Mark Guggenheim, for joining us. Can't wait to have you back on. Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow has finished. And a huge thank you, Dane. Thank you so much, Dane, for accompanying me on this ride. We were super nervous, but we did an amazing job.
Hey, we nerded out, man. Both me and you pitched casting ideas to Mark Guggenheim. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. And he didn't shoot them down. It seemed like he really enjoyed
them. He geeked out with us.
Absolutely. So, guys, this is what happens on with Geek Vibes. We give you guys great interviews, great episodes. Please make sure you guys are checking out Arrow when it returns from its very small break due to the Olympics. And before we go, I want to give a huge shout-out to Kanan, who put together this interview. Thank you so much, Kanan. And stay tuned, guys. Next week, not tomorrow, next week, we are looking to get you guys that interview that we have with David Mazzaz from Gotham. So, again, thank you, Mark Guggenheim, and thank you, Dane. And we will see you guys, I believe, this Saturday for Top 10 and Sunday for Geek Vibes Live.
Yep, no Wrestling Geeks Alliance this week, guys. We got Black Panther tomorrow.
Absolutely. So stay tuned for our Black Panther wrap-up this Sunday in Top 10, where we will be going over the top 10 greatest superhero villains in movie history ever. So stay tuned for those two amazing things, and we will see you guys this weekend.
Peace out, people.